You're listening to the MLB Pipeline Podcast with your host, Ed Randall.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, and welcome to the MLB.com Pipeline Podcast. I'm joined by our draft and minor league expert, Jim Callis. Jonathan Mayo is away. Wrigley Field in Chicago Saturday was the site of the 8th annual Under Armour game. Jim, you worked the game. How did it go watching the next wave of prospects?
Yeah, it's always interesting. I always enjoy getting a kind of an early look at some of the top high school players for the next year's draft, although, you know, this year's game was probably the sloppiest I've seen. I don't know if I've been at all 8 of them at Wrigley Field, and I think I have. Maybe I missed one, but I know I've been to at least 7 of them, and it was 11-5 game, won by the American team, but we had 18 walks, so that was kind of disappointing. A lot of pitchers had trouble with command, and we're pretty much just throwing fastballs. It wasn't like they were trying to throw a lot of secondary pitches, so that was a little disappointing, and it was kind of something I had never seen before. Three runs scoring on a bases-loaded wild pitch with two errors. We had a first run score, the catcher threw the ball back to the plate, and it was kind of a high throw that got away from the pitcher as the runner was sliding in. Neither middle infielder backed up the play, so the first baseman came running in, and he threw the ball back to the plate to try to get the second runner, and he threw the ball away. And then, so, sloppy game, but there were some interesting prospect performances that, you know, give us a sneak preview for next year.
Did anybody stand out to you?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because the pitcher everybody was most excited about seeing was Riley Pint, who I think is right now the number two high school, you know, prospect for next year's draft. And he walked three guys in the first inning. And really, the pitcher who I thought made the best impression was actually the guy who came in the second inning after Pint, a kid named Forrest Whitley from Texas. He was very good. He had good riding life on his fastball, pitched a 1-2-3 inning, struck out guys with 96 and 95-mile-an-hour fastballs. Was very impressed with Forrest Whitley. I think from an offensive standpoint, there were a couple that run the game. One guy who stood out for me was Andy Yerzy, a Canadian catcher. He actually, I don't know if you saw him during the All-Star game, Ed. He was part of the Junior Home Run Derby where they have a couple high school players, and he actually tied the other high school kid in the Home Run Derby for the high school port championship with 10 homers in that. But anyway, Andy Yerzy hit an opposite field homer off a 92-mile-an-hour second inning off a pitcher named Zach Lingenfelter, who's one of the better pitchers in the game. I knew he had power, but seeing him show that power to the opposite field was very impressive. A couple other guys who were impressive, Bo Bichette, who you know, is Dante's son, former All-Star in the big leagues, Dante Bichette, and Dante Jr. plays for the Yankees. Bo hit a triple, made a couple nice defensive plays at second. There's a lot going on in this swing, but he's got a lot of power, and he won the pregame home run derby. And a third guy who stood out, and I thought he had the best at-bats in the game, was a kid named Carter Kaboom from Georgia, high school infielder. He's got a brother named Spencer who's a catching prospect in the national system, and another brother, Trevor, at the University of Georgia, although Carter is going to go to Clemson. You know, he had two very, very good at-bats, one opposite field on a 98-mile-an-hour fastball from Pint for a single. And then he also, up the middle, had a nice 7-pitch at-bat, had a single on a 92-mile-an-hour fastball. Just very impressed with him. He wound up striking out looking in his third at-bat, and it was kind of a I'm not sure it was really strike three. That was like, even though it goes down as a strikeout, that was a good at-bat. They're the best combination of at-bats of anybody in the game.
These are kids that we'll be looking at, and you'll be looking at them most closely as they continue to progress. Now, Jim, that the trade deadline is long past us and numerous prospects were traded to enhance pennant chances, some farm systems have been weakened while others have been strengthened. You are ranking the best of the best. Who now is the cream of the crop?
I think the Red Sox have the best farm system in baseball. We thought they had the number two farm system coming into the year behind the Cubs. And, you know, they've lost some guys, not to trades, but to big league graduations. You know, Eduardo Rodriguez doesn't count as a prospect anymore. You know, Blake Swihart was the best catching prospect in baseball. He doesn't count as a prospect anymore. But there's still Henry Owens struck out 10 guys yesterday. You know, he still counts as a prospect. He's barely been up in the big leagues. But they got more lefties on the way in Brian Johnson and Henry Owens. But really the strength of their farm system is down in Class A. In low Class A, they have Yoan Moncada, who we've talked about on this podcast before. Cost him $63 million to sign. I think he's got the best tools of anybody in the minors, not named Byron Buxton. They've got a third baseman named Rafael Devers. They've got a slick-feeling shortstop, Javier Guerra, whose power has come out of nowhere this year. And they've got more talent, too. They've got an outfielder in Double-A named Manuel Margot, who was the subject of a lot of trade talks. I think if the Red Sox had contended, he would have been a prime target. They've got a 17-year-old right-hander named Anderson Espinosa, who's already hitting 98 miles an hour with plus secondary pitches. He's making his U.S. debut this year, and they had the number 7 pick in this year's draft, Ed, and they got Andrew Benintendi, who's probably the best college athlete in the draft, and he's off to a great start at Lowell. He's walked almost twice as much as he struck out. He's hit 7 home runs in about a month, and he's looked terrific as well.
Who weakened themselves through the trade deadline, Jim?
What's interesting is you have teams like the Astros and Rangers who probably gave up more top 100 prospects than anybody at the trade deadline, and they still made our top 10. I mean, the Astros came into the season ranked 8th. I still have them ranked 8th, even though they traded Brett Phillips and Domingo Santana off our top 100. They traded Jacob Nottingham, who's emerged as one of the biggest minors. He went to Oakland, the Scott Kazmir trade. Phillips and Santana went to Milwaukee in the Carlos Gomez, Mike Fiers trade. And they've also lost prospects just to graduation. You know, they don't get credit for Carlos Correa anymore. They don't get credit for Lance McCullers anymore or Preston Tucker, all of whom have played very well in Houston. But the reason they rank 8th is they had, you know, they added 3 of the best top 7 players in the draft, Cameron and Kyle Tucker. They had guys like Mark Appel and Vince Velasquez who are already in the system, right-handed pitchers. And they've had a number of guys who've really stepped up this year in the minors, guys like first baseman A.J. Reed, who leads the minors in homers, and right-handers Francis Martes and Joe Musgrove, who were trade acquisitions in the past when the Astros were sellers, not buyers. So I thought that was interesting that they kind of maintained their ranking, and then the same thing with the Rangers. Season, they rank 9th now, and that's after giving up 3 top 100 prospects in the Cole Hamels trade. Thompson, Williams, and Alfaro all went to the Phillies, but they still have 5 top 100 guys. They kept Joey Gallo, Nomar Mazara, their top 2 prospects. Lewis Brinson has been having a breakout year, and their last 3 first-round picks are right-handers who've looked very good: Dylan Tate, Luis Ortiz, and Alex Gonzalez. So I thought that was kind of interesting to me, Ed, that you had probably two teams who gave up the most or the biggest name talent at the deadline still have 2 of the best farm systems in baseball.
And I want to ask you this. You know this, Jim, better than anybody, but it appears that the Toronto Blue Jays are one of those rare organizations that don't hoard their prospects, that they're going to go out there and they're going to get who they want to get for the big club, and they're going to give up whoever they want to give up. In doing so, with the trades that they made, did they weaken themselves significantly?
They did on the pitching side. I mean, I think Toronto's in a situation where you have a new club president's going to be coming in at the end of the year. They have the longest playoff baseball. The GM, Alex Anthopoulos, has been there for 6 years, and they haven't gone to playoffs. So I think there's more pressure on them to win now. Maybe some of it's self-imposed, but I think they're looking at 2015 more than the future, probably more than just about any club. And while they did give up, I don't have the exact number in front of me yet. I think they traded 11 or 12 or maybe 13 minor league in their trades, most notably Daniel Norris and the David Price trade with the Tigers. Every one of the guys they gave up was a pitcher, which was interesting. And while they thinned out the pitching, and they don't have a top 10 system now, but I still don't think the system's in total disrepair because they still have a pair of pitchers I really like in Jonathan Harris and Sean Reed Foley, who came out of the last 2 drafts lower in the draft than they should have, and I think are going to have potential to be frontline pitchers. But what they still have is they have pretty nice position player talent because they didn't give up any position players. You've got Dalton Pompey, who we saw in the big leagues last September, and he's starting to heat up in the minors. I think he started the year as their center fielder and got sent down. I think we'll see him in Toronto again soon. They have Anthony Alford, who's a pick in 2000, who's been missed to play quarterback. The Blue Jays signed him to a 2-sport deal. And he kind of bounced around from Southern Miss to Ole Miss before, at the end of 2014, deciding that they were going to, he was going to focus on baseball. And usually when you lose 3 years of at-bats, he played only sporadically in pro ball, it's tough to get it back as a hitter. But he's hit 290 this year between 2 Class A stops. He's got unbelievable tools. He's excited. They got Max Brown, catcher from last year's draft. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., son of Vladimir, obviously, who not the all-around athlete his dad is, but he can, kind of reminds you of him at the plate a little bit with the way it seems like he can square up any ball anywhere. He just signed for $3.9 million this summer. They've got power-hitting shortstop Richard Arena. They've got power-hitting first baseman Rowdy Tellez. I could go on and on. I mean, they do have position players trading off pitchers. So the cupboard is not completely bare. I don't think they're going to get a lot of immediate pitching help from their system, but they do have some promising arms too.
Jim, this weekend, a huge story broke as Milwaukee farmhand first baseman David Denson, playing in the Pioneer League in Helena with the Helena Brewers in Montana, came out as gay. This marks the first time a player in affiliated ball has made that declaration. Forgetting the politics of it, what kind of player is David Denson?
He's interesting, Ed. I mean, he's got huge left-handed raw power. And if you go on our website, in fact, and one of the stories we have on him, when he was in high school, he was in this this event called the Power Showcase. It's this annual home run derby in Major League Parks where they use aluminum bats. Hit a 515-foot homer off the scoreboard in right center, just crushed it. And he's got, you know, he's 6'3", 254. It's huge, huge raw power. You know, the question with him is he going to hit enough to get to that power on a consistent basis? He struggled in two shots at low class A. He's back in rookie ball for the third time in three pro seasons. And he struck out, I think he's averaged about strikeout every bat as a pro. He's a career 238 hitter in the minors. You know, he's hit 15 homers in 181 minor league games despite striking out as much as he has. And, you know, ultimately I think that's going to determine, you know, if he can make more contact, he's got the power to climb the ladder, but he has yet to show that he can do that on a consistent basis. Although, you know, as you mentioned, I mean, I don't think that his performance is going to be his lasting legacy in baseball. And, you know, hats off to him. I mean, it's pretty courageous to be the first guy to do something like that. And, you know, and we'll see where he goes from here.
Exactly. We had the pitcher with the unaffiliated team in Sonoma, California, come out recently. And now David Denson, the first in organized ball as a farmhand of the Milwaukee Brewers. Jim, great work as always. And on behalf of Jim Callis, I'm Ed Randall. Thanks so much for listening to the MLB.com Pipeline Podcast.